Zeit Gang, you like to watch new stuff, right? I mean, who doesn't? I do. Well, go to Hulu and see what's new, because Hulu has new stuff all the time, like Vanderpump Villa, the new docudrama starring Lisa Vanderpump, where first-class luxury meets world-class drama, a new season of The Kardashians starring The Kardashians, of course, and Grand Cayman, Secrets in Paradise, the sizzling new reality show set in the tropical Caribbean. It's streaming now, and it's waiting for you on Hulu.
What up? I am Dramos, host of the Life as a Gringo podcast. This is a show for the No Sabo kids, the 200%ers. Here we celebrate your otherness and embrace living in the gray area. Every Tuesday, I'll be bringing you conversations around personal growth, issues affecting the Latin community, and much more. Then every Thursday, I'll be tackling trending stories and current events from our community. Listen to Life as a Gringo on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
If you love sports and true crime, then there's a new podcast from executive producer Dan Patrick and hosted by me, Jay Harris, that you won't want to miss. Playing Dirty Sports Scandals. Each week, I'm squeezing the juiciest details from some of the biggest sports scandals ever. I'm talking Marcus Dixon, Olympic gymnastics, Cain Velasquez, salacious Super Bowl-level scandals. Join me on the dark side of sports by listening to Playing Dirty Sports Scandals on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Imagine you're a fly on the wall at a dinner between the mafia, the CIA, and the KGB. That's where my new podcast begins. This is Neil Strauss, host of To Live and Die in L.A., and I wanted to quickly tell you about an intense new series about a dangerous spy taught to seduce men for their secrets and sometimes their lives. From Tenderfoot TV, this is To Die For. To Die For is available now. Listen for free on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Hello, the internet, and welcome to Season 24, Episode 4 of Der Daily Zeitgeist!
Yeah.
For March 29th, 2018. Happy anniversary to my lovely wife. My name is Jack O'Brien, a.k.a. Hobo Brian.
Oh, okay.
It's courtesy of Velo Pope, because apparently I talk about how I've been everywhere in America to the point that people are starting to think that I just spent my childhood riding the rails. But I am thrilled to be joined, as always, by my wonderful co-host, Mr. Miles Gray.
What's she order? Miles Gray? Uh-huh. No? Okay. Well, that, a.k.a. fell flat. That was from Sarcastic Samurai. You duped me, Daze Eddie, on that one. No, that was a Kanye West one from, you know, the song. Yeah. Niggas in Paris. It was supposed to be Fish Filet, but it was Miles Gray. Anyway, and I'm taking too long to explain that.
Difficult. And we are thrilled to be joined in our third seat by the very funny comedian, writer, and fashion maven, Riley Silverman.
Hello, thank you for having me back.
Hey, we are thrilled to have you.
I like
you.
How you sort of slightly popped your sweater as you said.
Yeah,
I
mean, right.
Well, you know, well, I do what I can.
Riley,
I've been featured from time to time.
What is something from your search history that is revealing about who you are?
Yesterday it was the phrase kitchen table poly.
I don't know what that means.
I didn't either, which is why I had to search it. It is a polyamory term, and I found out because. So I think last time I was on the show, I was seeing someone, and I am not anymore. So I guess I can say my overrated is being dumped. But that. So I've been back on the dating apps, and there was someone whose profile I was reading yesterday on OkCupid, and she said that she considers her view on what they call. Ethical non-monogamy, like that's a fancy term for polyamory type of things. And then I'm sure a listener's like, that's not what that means. but there's a phrase, kitchen table poly, and what that means is that you were in a polyamorous relationship, and the idea is that it's so civil that all the parties involved could have a casual conversation around a kitchen table and chat and drink coffee and stuff like that, despite the fact that you're also like not being monogamous to each other. So, you know, which is interesting.
That sounds lovely.
Yeah, it sounds delightful.
It sounds like a great arrangement.
I don't think it sounds possible for me.
Right, right.
But I think that I'm happy for her, and I wish her luck.
I like
her
kitchen
endeavors.
Table as a modifier.
Yeah, me too.
Yeah.
And what is something you think is underrated?
I think the TV show Legion on FX.
Okay.
I mean, it has fans. It's coming back for season 2. It's starting, I think, next week. And I don't see that much hype for it. And I think it's a fantastic show. I think as a nerd who's super into, like, I loved X-Men growing up. And I think that there's a lot of, like, you know, a lot of legit gripes about the X-Men film franchise. And I think Legion is one of the, like, best things that has come out of any sort of like adaptation of trying to take the X-Men books and make it into a show or a movie. It doesn't use characters that are super familiar to most audiences. Like, they're definitely characters from the books, but they're not. It's kind of like Guardians of the Galaxy, where because you're not working with like a super entrenched fan base, like you can kind of get a little more leeway about what stories you can tell.
Right.
But it's also show run by Noah Hawley, who does Fargo, the TV series, which is like, I think, one of the best shows on TV.
Right.
And so it has that similar like DNA of just amazing visuals, like really trippy things happening. The main characters, like his mutant abilities are all like mental and psychic and stuff like that. Mm-hmm. So there's a whole lot of just really trippy dream sequences in the first season, and a whole lot of Aubrey Plaza being really,
really good.
Really Aubrey Plaza-y. Yeah.
Really?
And, like, just letting...
I was surprised. Yeah. Because I got into it late after people were like, you got to watch Legion. You got to watch Legion. And like, for if anything else, just to see Aubrey Plaza.
She's amazing.
And I was like, whoa, look at you. Like, yeah. She's really great in it.
She plays a character that was written as a male character, and she just kills it. And like, oh, I can't imagine a guy playing this character now. Because she's so good.
Oh, I didn't even know that.
Yeah, there's so much. And then she's like so unhinged at points, but also like there's points where like she's wearing like a dapper suit and just looks amazing. And there's other points where she's like just losing her mind, and like her like makeup's all runny and like her hair's all messed up. And she's kind of like, I can't even get into it. Yeah. It's just so good.
You have to witness wonderful. Yourself.
Yeah.
I feel like this is a thing that I've noticed with another show that I really liked, Preacher, where there was a lot of excitement around the first season when it was first coming out. Mm-hmm. It came out. I thought it was a very successful first season. And then the second season came and everyone was like, yeah. You know, like people didn't even really like publicize it as much. I just think because there's just so much content and it's like the novelty has worn off.
But... And I've heard Preacher's one that I haven't watched, but like it has really loyal fans who are like rabid about it and rave about how good it is. Another show like that. Since I work for sci-fi, let me go ahead and just do some synergy here. The Magicians is a show that I haven't watched, but people tell me that if you get through the first season, the second and third season just gets amazing. And so it's one of those ones where I'm like, I really need to get on that and watch it, and I haven't yet.
Shout out to Summer Bischel, you know, my homie's sister.
Nice.
Who's on that show.
Nice.
And what is something you think is overrated?
Hayton.
All right.
Just Hayton,
We were talking about I couldn't think of a way to sum up, but I think that, like, I'm so tired of this whole, like, nerd culture thing, not even as nerd at this point, like fandom culture, where it's like you're almost defined more by what you don't like than what you do
And
I as someone who writes for sci-fi fangirls and writes for like nerdy things, I'm getting tired of I'm not saying you shouldn't like legitimately criticize things that deserve it, like that's definitely not what I'm going for, but I feel like there's this thing to just go on Twitter and be like, screw this thing sucks, and like, not, instead of celebrating what you love, you're just tearing down the things you don't love. And I think, like we were talking about, there's so much out there right now that we're missing shows that are really good.
Right.
It's like, man, just maybe just pump the brakes on that negative energy and find something that is for you. And
that's,
like, there's a lot of, well, I think we're going to talk about it later, but there's a lot of praise and backlash for Ready Player One, which I think is like a little bit overrated on both sides as a thing to talk about. But like, I think if you really want to see that movie, like, and it's like, it's serving what you are looking for, I think you should enjoy it. And I also think that, like, maybe, like, it doesn't need to be, like, demonized as the worst movie ever.
Right.
But, yeah, and I think, like, there's a certain point where, because I hate when there's a phrase that I love called, don't yuck my yum. And that that has become my, like, philosophy in fandom over the last, like, several years. And I find that I'm enjoying my world of fandom way more now that I've been that way.
Yeah, it's weird how people can, like, sort of embrace, like, negative energy to sort of justify their love of something.
Yeah.
Because, like, even as a fan of sports, you even have factions of fans of sports that are sort of, like, polarized by their opinion on a certain thing. Like, even right now, as an Arsenal fan, got a shout out to Arsenal, they're like, we're in a tournament that a group of fans want us to fail, so the manager is fired.
Yeah.
So they're like, no, we gotta fuck this up so this guy can lose. And it's like almost like, whoa, what the? And it's interesting what people put their energy towards.
Yeah, right. I'm always flabbergasted by people who are rooting for a thing that they are a fan of to fail. Like, I, as a Doctor Who fan, there's a group of fans that want the show to get canceled because they don't want there to be a female doctor.
Right.
But that's like...
Yeah.
Celebrate it.
And whenever there's like a thing where like someone's not watching a thing and they go, why isn't it canceled yet? Just don't watch it. Yeah, like, you 100% don't have to watch it.
Yeah, you're not making the budgets for the network where you're like, oh, why isn't this canceled yet?
Yeah, like I think they think that if it gets canceled, then it'll get replaced immediately with a version of the show that they love. But that's not going to happen. If the show gets canceled, it's canceled. It's gone. It's done.
Yeah, the slim chance that it's going to come back.
Right.
Yeah.
At least not for another like 20 years like it did last time.
Exactly.
And for sports fans out there, this is how I've always felt about LeBron James. Like, the amount of energy people the number of calories people burned hating LeBron James when he went to Miami. And it's just like such a waste of energy and time. And you're rooting against somebody who's doing something, who's like a type of player that we've just like never seen. He's a physical genius that we've never seen. Like, why, as a fan of the sport, would you root against him to like do amazing things?
Because he's not
having
on your team.
Said that, I would say that if you were a Cleveland fan, right, when that happened, totally, I think you are a little justified in feeling betrayed.
Totally justified.
But then he came back. So
I just more hated the event of it.
The decision was painful.
I was like, this
at
is
least he made money. At least he made charity money doing that.
Right.
Like, at least the money he made doing that wasn't just like, well, now my mom's buying hats. Like, it wasn't that kind of thing.
At the end of the day, it's sage-like wisdom, Riley, because it's really about, put your energy, if you're going to expend energy, make it good. Make it positive, because you're only just going to contribute to an environment of love and positivity.
Yeah.
If you put all that bullshit
you
out,
love.
Nah, man, you fuck. That's a waste.
Right.
Don't give your energy away like that.
Yeah.
And finally, what is a myth? What's something people think is true that you know to be false?
I think the idea that social media is run by interns. I think that is such a ridiculous thing.
Yeah, you do see that sometimes. It's like, oh, some intern's getting fired. It's
Yeah, I just like, because I dated my ex that I mentioned earlier works in social media, and they're like super busy all the time, and like it's like a stressful job for them.
Yeah.
And then people are like, some intern messed up. It's like, no, that's a person who's in an office who like scheduled this, has like analysis of data of when the prime time to run a tweet. Like, social media is like the window of companies to the public.
Yeah.
And the idea they would just hand it to some college kid who's only been there for a few weeks because they're on a work study program is like, that. No, that's not how that's working.
In the early days of social media, right, the idea of the position of the social media manager hadn't quite formed yet. So I think at the time, like, older people at a company would be like, well, this young kid uses Twitter, so can you make the Facebook or whatever?
Right. Yeah.
But as I think companies had to begin to really rely on a social media presence and a digital presence, we need like experts.
Well, it's the same thing as like the idea that all podcasts are recorded in someone's basement.
Right.
Like while the washer dryer is running in the background.
We do it in a Faraday cage.
Yes, exactly. Yeah. I had to get retinal scans. I had to go through security to get here.
Yeah. Blood tests, everything. We had to make sure there wasn't enough like heavy metals in your body.
Yeah. I didn't like being microchipped. I will say that I didn't appreciate that.
You got to keep a track.
We got to know where our guests are and if they live what they preach.
What if somebody cancels, you know? We need immediate
and you're aware, Riley?
You.
Says you're at an IKEA right now. social media is, it's so funny when you talk about how there's an entire department usually devoted to that. And what's funny too is like a lot of companies now that are deleting Facebook, I wonder, are they just wholesale being like, hey, everyone who ran Facebook, like, there's your job. Like, I know Playboy just got rid of theirs, like Tesla and many other companies.
Twitter, there's still Instagram.
Right.
There's still,
but some companies, like, you know, Snapchat. I used to work for Playboy with Jamie Loftus. Shout out, Jamie.
Yeah.
And Facebook was like the main window. Like, that was their main interaction with people for the company.
Yeah.
So to get rid of that for a brand that is already on the...
radio ads used to be the main window to things.
Right.
And when radio ads kind of became less... radio ads still exist, but they're not what they used to be now. Then TV ads became a thing. And now TV ads are kind of moving to the wayside. And now social media ads. That's just the nature of things.
Right.
But I mean, Facebook still... Like, as much as people are like, I'm tired of Facebook. Nobody goes on Facebook anymore. It was still a huge, huge driver of traffic when I left Cracked. And I mean, as much as people don't like to be on Facebook, they still are in huge, huge numbers.
Yeah.
And so the fact that Hugh Hefner's son,
Cooper.
Yeah, Cooper Hefner was like, because Tesla deleted their Facebook presence, I'll do the same.
Yeah.
That probably like fucked them pretty hard.
Tesla has many other offerings that people are interested in. Playboy is still a physical magazine.
Yeah, right. Tesla can still fire cars into the sun, so they're fine. Whereas Playboy, has some issues.
We have the internet,
literally, because they're a magazine.
Oh, there you go.
All right,
we're locked in.
Some issues. All right, we're trying to take a sample of what people are thinking and talking about right now, mostly in America, but we're going to go international today a little bit. But first up, we want to talk about the premiere of Roseanne. Over 18 million people viewed the premiere of the new rebooted Roseanne. And a lot of people are kind of taking this as a sort of vindication of Trumpism, because in the show, Roseanne is a Trump supporter. And so you're seeing...
And real life.
Right, and in real life. And the first episode was sort of a conversation between her and Jackie about, the Trumpism versus people who oppose Trump. I think Jackie was portrayed as like a cartoon of liberalism. Like she walked in with a pussy hat and
an outfit made of kale.
Right. But yeah, so I mean, it is a perspective that you don't tend to get from mediated pop culture that's coming out of Los Angeles.
Sure. I never watched the show growing up because I didn't really see myself in the reality of that show. But I know many people that liked it. But was the show problematic back then? I thought, like, based on what I was reading, like, they use sort of this working class reality to also talk about sort of other issues within it. Like, there was gay marriage, like, at the time when the show was happening, but what apparently was a controversial episode. Is this new version, like, are they just going whole hog on Trump where it's like, no, we're going to normalize Trump using Roseanne? Right. Or is it still going to be like, we'll have elements of people who support Donald Trump and also try and use that and juxtapose that with other people and then explore the relationship that we have between families or whatever between people having sort of these political ideological differences?
I've heard a defense of it that tries to compare it to All in the Family, because on All in the Family, obviously the Archie Bunker was like an old like crotchety bigot.
Right.
But I think the difference between that and this is that Carol O'Connor himself was not that way, and like he was like a, like he himself did not feel that way, but the show like used him as a foil. Now, to be fair, like Rob Reiner's character on that show was kind of a caricature of like a young liberal kid too.
Right.
So it was kind of, there was that there, but it doesn't help if the only like mouthpiece for that idea is Jackie and she's kind of a punchline and like a thing, then that may not be what they're trying to achieve. But
yeah,
there are a lot of really like, there are queer writers for the show, people of color. Like, I don't know what they're attempting with it, but like,
right,
it might be possible. Like, they're actually trying to find a way to like bridge the gap in the fight between Trump
right.
supporters and Hillary supporters. I don't know what they're going for, but that seems to be what they're claiming to be going
right.
for.
Portray the disagreement rather than taking necessarily a side in the disagreement.
Right, right. But it seems like from how our writer JM was describing it, it seems like there are like plenty of things left hanging where a liberal character says something and then that's just the joke, but there's no like,
and Roseanne gets the last
word.
Yeah,
gets the last word.
Trumpism
and it's like,
gets the last word. Yeah, I think it's probably more evenly distributed than you would typically see in a show about liberal city dwellers, you know, written by liberal city dwellers.
Right.
You know, I think that's probably partially both because Roseanne herself is not just the, you know, namesake and star of the show. She's also, you know, one of the executive producers and one of the loudest voices in the writer's room. And, you know, she herself is a Trump supporter. But, you know, it's also a stated goal of the show to try and accurately reflect what people who are living in the middle of America, who are in this, you know, income bracket, would think like in the conversations that they're having. There's an interview with the co-EP of the show, a guy, Bruce Rasmussen, who was also, you know, heavily involved in the previous incarnation of it, who was saying, you know, that the writer's room itself, outside of Roseanne, is still fairly liberal. It's a lot of LA comedy writers, you
right.
know? But, you know, they are having to dig, and I think probably having Roseanne there keeps them honest about this. They're having to dig to, you know, write from the perspective of somebody who is a Trump supporter, who does think that Trump is going to do something for them.
Right. It's like the Black Panther for white working class people.
Right. And I think
this is their Wakanda.
Yeah. And I think there are other shows that do the same thing. Like, I think Atlanta is another example. That
right.
was something that kept jumping out to me in the first season, is how much of that show is about like struggling to, you know, like go out on a date when you don't have the money to pay
right,
for the
right,
date.
Right, yeah.
And like,
yeah.
you know,
very grounded in reality.
Right. Very like, grounded in economic realities, which is something like from back when I was at Cracked, you know, we had people who grew up fairly poor on our writing staff. And anytime they would write articles about growing up poor and, you know, what it's like to be poor, they would get way more traffic than their normal articles would, because people, I think, are just so starved for content that reflects the reality of
right.
life as the majority of people in America live it, which is as, you know, not somebody who can afford a giant apartment in Manhattan.
Right.
You know?
And like even Lady Bird was kind of like that. Was one of the draws of that movie.
Much.
It was like
yeah.
people like that was pre-economic collapse. Like that was just people living in like 90s era. Yeah.
Yeah.
What was I going
to say? Did you watch the show?
I did not watch the show. I have issues with Roseanne herself and some stuff she's had with transphobia on Twitter and historically. And it's hard because it's one of the things where she deleted a lot of her old tweets when the show was announced. And I think that may have been the network asking her to do it. I'm not sure. And all this stuff was happening in the era where tweets weren't as readily cataloged as they are now. So you can find a lot of like think pieces about the tweets, but that aren't screenshots of the tweets.
Right.
Like it was a little bit rough, and so I've kind of steered clear of it because at times she's gotten pretty aggressive with people, and so I'm a little antsy about it. Now, one thing I will say about the show, just from like reading about it, is that there's been a lot of things like, oh, how dare you support Roseanne because she's a transphobe, and then people point out that there is a character on the show that is one of Darlene's children, and it's a boy who is like gender nonconforming and dresses in girls' clothing on the show, and that I guess Roseanne as a character is very supportive of him, and people have been going, see, this show's not transphobic because there's this kid that wears dresses, whatever.
Right.
And I think that like that is a oversimplification of what's happening in the situation. Now, I am not saying this to attack it. I actually think it's great they're doing this character, and I think that it is really good to have a show that is hitting this market, like you were saying, that also addresses the idea of letting a kid in a middle class culture, especially in middle America, being able to be openly expressive of gender nonconformity and be able to dress how he feels, and that's great. So I 100% support them doing that. So I don't want to be seen like I'm attacking that, but I do think that like step back from using that as an example of the show not being transphobic, because that does not mean the show's not transphobic. In fact, Roseanne openly refers to trans women, at least she did on Twitter in the time when she was like really engaging in this, as men in dresses. So you could even make the argument that like that they're making this a boy who wears dresses who is explicitly not transgender as a way of being like, oh, this is all this really is. And even though it's really two different things, and they're not saying that one should not be showcased and should not be celebrated. But it's just not. It'd be like if I'm on a show and I'm of Jewish descent, and someone's like, "That show's not racist. You got a Jew on there."
Right, right.
Like, ah, let's
or the
go
same
ahead.
People like, I have black friends.
Yeah,
right,
yeah
I'm
right.
not racist.
But it's not even that. Like, it's literally saying like this different group is represented, so this group is not being attacked. So, like, I don't think that that character in and of itself absolves Roseanne Barr herself of her history with transphobia. And so, I've the article that you guys linked to, or someone mentioned. Andrea James, who is a trans writer and like performer, like was praising the show, and she was saying the show's at the end of the day, the show's really funny, and that's what matters more than anything, and that's what's like gonna heal things. So there are trans voices who are watching the show and saying that it's fine. So for me, it's less about what the show is doing and more my own reservations about the Roseanne
creator.
Herself.
Right.
And so
yeah, I just as a kid, never appealed to me, but it just seemed like one of those things that everyone knew. Like it was like a show that I never watched, but I knew the characters' names,
right?
Just because like everyone would talk about it. But I don't know, Jack, you watched it.
Yeah, I watched it a lot growing up, and I didn't even realize, but, you know, Norm Macdonald ended up being one of my favorite comedians, and he was a writer on the show when I watched it back then, and he's still a consulting producer. Whitney Cummings is co-showrunner. Wanda Sykes is writing on it. It's like the writer's room is really impressive, and so I'm definitely going to check it out. I just haven't had a chance to yet.
Yeah, and I'm not, like, I will probably check it out at some point, and, like, it is, like, again, like, it's going back to my own overrated earlier, like, I think that there are people who are going to get something out of this, and it's going to be really useful for them. And so
you're not hating.
I'm not hating. I honestly think the fact that they have a gender nonconforming kid on the show is amazing. And so I support, I'm excited about that. And you know, I'm hoping that the people on the show like Sarah Gilbert and John Goodman, who have a perspective that is very different than what Roseanne Barr's perspective is, still are able to have enough creative input in the show that it's not just like a propaganda thing.
Yeah.
And I'm optimistic for it.
Yeah, me too.
I just haven't been able to bring myself to watch it for reasons.
All right, we're going to take a quick break. We will be right back.
You like to watch new stuff, right, Zygang? I know I do. Well, go to Hulu and see what's new. Because Hulu has new stuff all the time, like Vanderpump Villa, the new docudrama starring Lisa Vanderpump. Join Lisa and her hand-selected staff at Chateau Rosabelle, a glamorous estate in the French countryside, as they live, work, and play together 24/7. Vanderpump Villa is where first-class luxury meets world-class drama. And don't miss the new season of The Kardashians, starring The Kardashians, of course, and Season 5 promises new horizons for the entire Kardashian clan, and if you're looking for steamy streams, check out Grand Cayman Secrets in Paradise, the sizzling new reality show set on the tropical Caribbean island of Grand Cayman, where the rich come to play. But be warned, it's a small island, and secrets don't stay secret for long. So come check out what's new on Hulu this month. It's streaming now, and it's waiting for you on Hulu.
What up? I am Dramos, host of the Life as a Gringo podcast. Now, this is a show for the No Sabo kids, the 200%ers. Here we celebrate your otherness and embrace living in the gray area. If you ever felt like you were always too much this while also never being enough that, this is the podcast for you. Every Tuesday, I'll be bringing you conversations around personal growth, issues affecting the Latin community, and much more via my own personal stories, along with interviews with inspiring thought leaders from our community. Then, every Thursday, I'll be tackling trending stories and current events from our community that you need to know. So much of what makes our community so beautiful is our diversity, yet too often, those of us who don't fit into this dumb, stereotypical box of whatever it means to be Latino are left without a voice or just forgotten about. On this show, I celebrate the uniqueness of our culture and invite you to walk in your authenticity. Listen to Life as a Gringo as a part of the My Cultura Podcast Network, available on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
If you love sports and true crime, then there's a new podcast from executive producer Dan Patrick and hosted by me, Jay Harris, that you won't want to miss. Playing Dirty Sports Scandals. Each week, I'm squeezing the juiciest details from some of the biggest sports scandals ever. I'm talking Marcus Dixon, Olympic gymnastics, Cain Velasquez, salacious Super Bowl-level scandals. Join me on the dark side of sports by listening to Playing Dirty Sports Scandals on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
This is Neil Strauss, host of the Tenderfoot TV True Crime Podcast, To Live and Die in L.A. I'm here to tell you about the new podcast I've been undercover investigating for the last year and a half. It's called To Die For. Here's a clip.
All these girls were sent out into the world, and they were told, try to meet important men, try to attach yourself to important men.
The voice you're hearing is a Russian model agent telling me about spies sent out to seduce men with political power.
The war in Ukraine is also being fought by all these girls that are all over important cities.
For the first time, a military-trained seduction spy reveals how the Russian government turns sex and love into a deadly weapon.
If you want to kill your target, it's easy. You just seduce him, take him somewhere, start having sex, and then he's very vulnerable, so you can kill him easily.
To Die For is available now. Listen for free on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
And we're back. And so we wanted to start off with a controversy that is erupting around one of our podcast favorite talking heads, Laura Ingraham, has decided to go after some of the Marjorie Stoneman Douglas students and, you know, shooting survivors for not getting into the colleges that they wanted to get into.
Wow. The height of intellectual discourse.
Right. Yeah, just basically talking shit about...
Well, you didn't get into UCLA.
Right. Because specifically David Hogg, because he didn't get into like his top four choices for school, which were UC schools. And yeah, this has just been a trend that I'm seeing a lot in conservative media where they will try and show these kids subtly in a negative light to make them seem, you know, less impressive. You know, there's a big thing on, I think, Drudge or one of the conservative outlets I check where they're showing Emma Gonzalez singing a song that's like not a great song or something. And, you know, like they're highlighting that for a reason. Like they just want to, you know, without admitting that they're openly attacking these kids, they want to make them look less serious and less, you know, amazing and impressive, which is sort of how they have come across
they're in
to
a really,
people who've been watching.
They're in a bad position where they don't really have a lot of good facts on their side to argue their point. and they're up against. There's an article in the New Republic that just sort of talks about the smearing of the students is sort of symptomatic of their like ideological exhaustion on the right. And yeah, they're going up against, as they put it, they're facing a genuine conundrum. It's like the students of the shootings and just other victims or in general who are, you know, voicing their opinions, they're combining unimpeachable personal testimony, which is their experience surviving shootings, with specific gun control policies that are popular with a sizable amount of Americans. It's like the worst enemy of someone who's trying to actually have a debate. You're like, damn, like I'm in a really bad spot. And so all they can do is just attack the person, not the ideas. And I think, yeah, it shows you sort of like where they are in terms of the tricks that they have left in their bag,
yeah,
which really isn't nothing now.
What's interesting about it, too, is like their whole position on like Trump's kids is like, oh, you shouldn't attack the minors that are like, right, involved. And it's like weird like how like it's fine to attack minors when it's someone you disagree with. But when it's someone that's like on, yeah, your side and you're like, that's off limits. Like, what are you doing?
Well, I know,
like,
in behaving? The beginning, there was someone wrote, I think a conservative person wrote about how these kids are fair game now because they're actually public figures voicing controversial opinions or whatever. Therefore, like, they can be rebutted, but like in a respectful way.
Yeah.
But now we've seen them like just levy all kinds of, just,
well, like,
really...
photoshopping a Nazi uniform onto a kid is definitely beyond that.
Right.
Like, I'm not saying it to you, I'm saying it to them. But yeah, like there's a certain point where you got to go, oh no, you're bullying, quote unquote.
No, I think we need to tell Miles to stop doing that too.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's become a problem.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah.
My kids
didn't know. Well, guys, this is how I find the limits. You know what I mean? You have to cross the boundaries to know where they are.
One direction that I've seen conservative media try to cover things is that there's been a corresponding surge in NRA funding and NRA donations on the right, to combat the, you know, students and the surge in gun control. But so I was looking at that because I kept hearing that, and I think I talked about it on a past episode, but I actually found what they were talking about, and it's basically $500,000 more than they would normally make in like a quarter. They made in the quarter during that the shooting took place. But the numbers, they were like, which it was primarily comprised of $200 donations or like around $200 donations. So that breaks down to 2,500 people.
Right.
Which is
not a lot.
Yeah, that's not like really a huge, overwhelming, like the number, if 2,500 people had showed up for even one of the marches that they had had over the weekend, like the conservative media would have been like talking about that and making a point of how there wasn't grassroots support. Like, that's not a lot of people.
Well, it's interesting how like they also do the bullying thing of like they're saying, oh, these kids are bullies because they're using the logic of they bullied the shooter into the position of them shooting up the school, and then they now get to claim being victims despite being the bullies. But then that argument doesn't track too, because like there were a lot of tweets over the weekend that were saying like, oh, if it's about being bullying, then where are all the trans and like LGBT, poor kids, overweight kids who are also fucking bullied?
Yeah.
And why aren't they doing it? It seems to be a specifically white male thing.
Well, that bullied thing is becoming a big thing now. There's this whole walk up, not out movement, which is like trying to like rebut the walkouts that were happening. And that myth of the bully school shooter goes back all the way to at least Columbine, if not further.
Right.
And there was the idea of like, oh, Dylan Klebold and I can't remember
Eric Harris.
I was trying to say Dylan Harris. I'm like, no, that's not right. And that's Dylan Roof. No. Yeah. There was the whole argument. Oh, they were bullies and they were like mocked in school and they were. But like then it's like you get photos of them in like a full limo going to prom, and like they were like it's like this Nicholas Cruz guy. Like, there's that article that came out this week that was written by a Parkland student or interview that was like, I was nice to Nicholas Cruz and he still killed my friends. Like, it wasn't like this idea. I remember when I was in school after Columbine, because of that narrative, oh, the bullied kid is who the school shooter is, then what happens is then everyone becomes afraid of the kid who's already isolated and already being bullied, because like, oh, now he's going to shoot the school, and like makes it 10 times worse for that kid.
Right.
We had a student at my school who basically the rumor became he was going to shoot up the prom. And people were like, and he actually, I don't know if he sued the school or not, but I remember that was a big deal.
That's right.
To where I made a comment about it when the walkout happened, where I said, this is how my generation reacted to it. My school picked a kid who was already tormented and made him into a school shooter mentally in our head. He wasn't a school shooter. Yeah. And like somebody messaged me about it and they go, I was just thinking about, and they said him by name. So they knew exactly who I was talking about. They remembered this kid from 20 years ago that was being called this same thing. And so it is definitely. this is the worst argument because it basically just further isolates kids who are already isolated and are not going to be school shooter like victims, and they're probably going to get shot by school shooters. Yeah.
It's also a false narrative. The deep dive book into Columbine that won one of the major literature prizes points out that it wasn't a situation where either of them were really bullied.
Right.
One of the kids was kind of a loner who was just like kind of a mopey kid who was open to, you know, persuasion. And the other kid was just a, from birth to the time he did this, complete psychopath, like clinical criminal psychopath in every sense of the word. And he manipulated this other kid into doing it with him. And that's it.
Right.
That's what happened. A person who was a maniac, criminally deranged person created this crime. But we turned it into a morality play on like high school, which is
and
not
like blaming
fair to
the
high school
students. Blaming the kids who are being murdered for not being like psychologists who could help fix a broken person.
Now,
just
granted,
like,
we shouldn't bully people in high school. That, like, we're not pro bullying, but
I don't know about you, but I had my shit fully together by 15.
I was.
These kids need to be ashamed.
When did you then lose it? Because you don't have it now.
No, I lost it when I was broken up with in college, 22. Yeah.
I mean, like, I was a closeted trans kid in high school, so I was, like, always a little bit isolated and always a little bit disconnected from everything, and I was tormented, and people didn't even know that I was trans. Like, I was not at all open, but I think when you have a secret, people can just sense it about you, and, like, even up until, like, through my senior year, I was getting, like, picked on and tormented and stuff like that, so, like, it's, like, and I never once was, like, oh, I'm going to shoot up a school. I mean, I thought about hurting myself.
Right, tragically, the conclusion a lot of kids come to is self-harm.
Yeah.
But... yeah, and when now Laura Ingraham is definitely facing the music because I think, you know, Rachel Ray, Nutrish, is no longer advertising with her. I think Wayfair.
Rachel Ray's dog food.
Rachel Ray's
brand.
Dog food. I think like Wayfair and a couple other companies. So that, I guess, got her into gear, and she just did the most half-assed apology. Was saying something about like, in the spirit of Holy Week, I'm looking back and like I feel bad for if I hurt any of the brave students of the shooting.
It's just so...
But it's like, no, you're crying because you're losing your ad dollars.
And even
and
when
so
she
insincere.
Was even when she was talking shit about it, it wasn't like she was like, ha ha, you loser. She was just like, hey, looks like this guy didn't get into college. Easy to predict with like the acceptance rates and his grades.
His only a 4.1
but
GPA.
Just like gossipy, crazy shit that it's like, you're a nationally...
You're an adult.
An adult who's like a media figure talking about a kid who, like, that's...
That's shit another high school student says to another high school student where you're
being
like...
Being petty.
Oh, yeah, you didn't get to use you.
And then you're going to say something about bullying. Like, how? Really?
It doesn't
Yeah, the bullying narrative is not one that... Like, I remember Emma Gonzalez in her... The first speech that kind of put her on the map and, like, started this whole thing... was saying, you guys don't know this person. People accuse us of, you know, being mean. And I didn't know what she was talking about. But yeah, that is apparently a real narrative that it's like these students who were bullies. And there's also apparently a lot of sympathy for the shooter himself, just in general.
Probably because this narrative that he was a bully victim he really was. I mean, I don't know anything about this shooter. I haven't read the article about being nice to him, and I haven't read it yet because it's kind of traumatizing, kind of triggering a little bit. But like, I need to read it at some point. But yeah, like I think that like when you make someone that is like this martyr character, and you're gonna have people who suddenly are like, well, then I feel bad for him.
Well, yeah. Apparently, he's been receiving, as they say, scores of mail from fans like across the country. You know, while he awaits trial for 17 counts of murder. But yeah, like apparently it's been everything from like donations to his commissary account, which is critical for people who want to get food in jail that isn't in the... Anyway, from donations to his commissary account to straight up like thirsty photos from teenage girls that are like scantily clad and saying like, I'm beautiful, I want to be with you. And like, you know, there was another one of an 18-year-old from New York. Someone told him to keep his head up and said, no one else is dealing with your demons, meaning maybe defeating them could be the beginning of your meaning, friend, which was, interesting.
Yeah.
As well as like an older woman from Chicago sent him 9 photos, including shots of her cleavage in a bikini, eating a popsicle, close up of her backside.
Yeah.
I mean, it's not new because
it happens every time.
People are, you know, get hybristophilia or whatever. People are like sexually aroused over someone like doing criminal shit or like horribly heinous shit. Like, you know, many serial killers have had plenty of fans and stuff like that, but it's just the public defender who's representing him was just really shaking because they're like, it's a lot of teenage girls too, and it just felt slightly
like it's a
cool
thing.
Age.
And
I think that I wonder, this is a really off the deep end thought, but I wonder if it has something to do too with like a lot of YA oriented things have like these anti-hero characters.
Oh, right, like Fix the Monster. Kind
yeah,
of thing.
And I do wonder if like they're like I like that in my fiction because I do think that very few people are inherently evil and a lot of times just misinformed or whatever. But like as a Harry Potter fan, like, I am a Slytherin is my house, and I have gotten plenty of arguments as to like why Slytherin is not inherently evil, and like you can be a good Slytherin and like
that kind of,
and like I think that like what's interesting in like the Harry Potter and the Cursed Child play that was written later, they really do a lot to kind of like retcon why Draco Malfoy is the way he is.
Right.
And I do wonder if there's like that element of and like people
or elements of that, right?
And, like even like in Star Wars, like there's so much in the most recent one about like can Kylo Ren be brought back from the dark side? Can he be fixed? And I think there's something that that kind of fiction like maybe makes people go, oh, I bet I can fix this.
Right.
And not saying he can't be, quote unquote, fixed, like rehabilitated.
Yeah, but if
like,
that's where people's sympathy is sort of rooted. Yeah.
But yeah, and I mean, that's also how the media covers these people.
Right.
The media, you know, wants to, we've been seeing some criticism of the New York Times for their coverage of the Austin bomber, just the preferred
narrative. You mean the domestic terrorist.
Right, the domestic terrorist who they were covering as like a good kid from a good family, who from a loving family.
His life fell apart or something
like
that.
Like that, like you're saying, that makes for a more compelling villain, but the media needs to start taking seriously their responsibility to, you know, as a mouthpiece to the public. And like this is something that was done in Germany when some German guy like 15 years ago, their last mass shooting, went on a shooting spree at like a preschool, and they didn't show his picture on the news and they didn't put his name out. And it was like they were trying to experiment with this idea of, you know, not doing that. And we need to take a serious look at how we're covering these people.
Yeah.
Like, I think that's the problem in general with news as a commodity. You know, it's, I don't even know how you scale back that nowadays, because like infotainment, whatever, is such a prevalent part of our society, like with the 24-hour news cycle and like the cable news and also internet clickbait. But like back when news first came on like TV, it was an hour of like a loss hour you put on like as an exchange for being able to be on government airwaves, and it was much more informative. But now it's like, oh, it's interesting. Here's a really cool, interesting take on this bomber that makes them sympathetic, and then people are gonna click on that, and then we're gonna make profits. And like, I don't know how we now in 2018 versus like, you know, 15, 20 years ago in Germany when that wasn't as much of a thing, how do we fix that? Because I think it is an issue. I think you're right, but I don't know what to do about it.
Oh, at the very least, the media can emphasize the sort of talking about the victims and what can be done to prevent this kind of thing rather than just getting fixated on like, well, why did this one happen? Like, you know,
tell the stories of the victims. Like, tell the stories like these people, what was happening.
Humanize the victims more than the fucking perpetrators of the crimes. How about that?
Yeah.
Seems like a simple start.
Yeah. And I mean, this is not something I have any hope of happening. You know, the last time this was really put forward, there's a expert on, you know, media coverage of these sorts of events who just keeps banging this drum, like, don't show the picture, don't do the name, tell all the other details you need to, but no picture, no name, and don't show. Like, there are these weird things that he says matter, like don't show sirens when you're doing the news coverage, because that is like a sign of, you know, oh, it's exciting. It's like drawing everybody's attention to it. But I read a Washington Post op-ed from one of their reporters being like, this is ridiculous. We owe it to the people to like tell them what they want to know. And it's just like,
no,
not really, man. You have a responsibility.
That's not what your responsibility is.
Yeah. Right. Yeah.
But the thing is, like, that's a school of journalism they've probably gone through where they believe that's what they want. And like, it's so hard in a culture where we do have freedom of the press, which is great, but how do we then go, no, you can't report it that way?
Right.
Like, it's hard to have a conversation that's more about the ethics of something than the legalities of something, because if as long as it's legal to do it this way, people are going to continue to do it. Like, even if 50 papers say we're not going to do it this way anymore, and then the one that does it then sells more because it's sensationalizing
Then you got to keep up.
It's like, I don't know how we overhaul the culture to kind of like move away from that kind of element.
Yeah.
The very least,
that's what made
at the very least, get people to be able to parse through the coverage and know like what they're seeing might not be the best version of the coverage.
Right.
At the very least.
All right. We're going to take a quick break. We'll be right back.
You like to watch new stuff, right, Zygang? I know I do. Well, go to Hulu and see what's new. Because Hulu has new stuff all the time, like Vanderpump Villa, the new docudrama starring Lisa Vanderpump. Join Lisa and her hand-selected staff at Chateau Rosabelle, a glamorous estate in the French countryside, as they live, work, and play together 24/7. Vanderpump Villa is where first-class luxury meets world-class drama. And don't miss the new season of The Kardashians, starring The Kardashians, of course. And season 5 promises new horizons for the entire Kardashian clan. And if you're looking for steamy streams, check out Grand Cayman Secrets in Paradise, the sizzling new reality show set on the tropical Caribbean island of Grand Cayman, where the rich come to play. But be warned, it's a small island. And secrets don't stay secret for long. So come check out what's new on Hulu this month. It's streaming now, and it's waiting for you on Hulu.
What up? I am Dramos, host of the Life as a Gringo podcast. Now, this is a show for the No Sabo kids, the 200%ers. Here we celebrate your otherness and embrace living in the gray area. If you ever felt like you were always too much this while also never being enough that, this is the podcast for you. Every Tuesday, I'll be bringing you conversations around personal growth, issues affecting the Latin community, and much more via my own personal stories, along with interviews with inspiring thought leaders from our community. Then, every Thursday, I'll be tackling trending stories and current events from our community that you need to know. So much of what makes our community so beautiful is our diversity, yet too often, those of us who don't fit into this dumb, stereotypical box of whatever it means to be Latino are left without a voice or just forgotten about. On this show, I celebrate the uniqueness of our culture and invite you to walk in your authenticity. Listen to Life as a Gringo as a part of the My Cultura Podcast Network, available on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
If you love sports and true crime, then there's a new podcast from executive producer Dan Patrick and hosted by me, Jay Harris, that you won't want to miss. Playing Dirty Sports Scandals. Each week, I'm squeezing the juiciest details from some of the biggest sports scandals ever. I'm talking Marcus Dixon, Olympic gymnastics, Cain Velasquez, salacious Super Bowl-level scandals. Join me on the dark side of sports by listening to Playing Dirty Sports Scandals on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
This is Neil Strauss, host of the Tenderfoot TV True Crime Podcast, To Live and Die in L.A. I'm here to tell you about the new podcast I've been undercover investigating for the last year and a half. It's called To Die For. Here's a clip.
All these girls were sent out into the world, and they were told, try to meet important men, try to attach yourself to important men.
The voice you're hearing is a Russian model agent telling me about spies sent out to seduce men with political power.
The war in Ukraine is also being fought by all these girls that are all over important cities.
For the first time, a military-trained seduction spy reveals how the Russian government turns sex and love into a deadly weapon.
If you want to kill your target, it's easy. You just seduce him, take him somewhere, start having sex, and then he's very vulnerable, so you can kill him easily.
To Die For is available now. Listen for free on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
And we're back, and we wanted to talk a little bit. There's this Reddit thread that somebody tweeted at us. Sorry for not getting your name. I'll shout you out somewhere. But they tweeted at us because someone was basically like, hey, non-Americans of Reddit, what's the biggest news story in your country right now? You know, what is your Stormy Daniels at this moment? What is your Austin domestic terrorist at this moment? And, you know, the answers were these really, you know, crazy stories, but also stories that I don't know that they would rise to the top of the media pile for the reasons we were just discussing of, like, you know, American media needs sensationalism, and these are more just kind of overall interesting things that are happening in countries that affect a lot of people, but they're definitely not the most, you know, sensational stories.
Right.
Like in New Zealand, their prime minister is pregnant, which is, I think, the first time that a head of state has been pregnant while in office.
Okay, let him know.
That's really cool, and I'm sure there are all sorts of really interesting stories to tell about that. But yeah, I don't know. Would that be a huge story if Hillary was in office and pregnant?
Well, probably because she's, you know, way postmenopausal, yeah. So it'd be kind of nuts.
That would be an amazing story.
A medical miracle.
It'd be a science thing too. Right. Yeah.
Yeah.
I don't know. I mean, isn't Tammy Duckworth pregnant right now?
I think she is. Yeah.
So, I mean, we have people in office, but yeah, I guess not a head of state, though. That's significant.
Well, we have a head of state who was threatening to have fistfights with a former vice head of state on Twitter. So I think we can talk about emotions and what, how crazy someone being pregnant would be. Imagine if it was somebody who.
Which is funny because in a poll that was taken, most people thought Joe Biden would win that fight.
Of course he would.
But I love that someone actually was petty enough to have a poll. Yeah. Like, who can win that fistfight?
But yeah, I mean, like, women have babies. I mean, cis women have babies. And, like, I think, like, yes, if you're going to start putting more women in power, you're going to have more women in power who are having children. Well, they shouldn't have to like stop running country. Like,
right.
It's not like the prime minister doesn't have assistance to help her raise a child while also being prime minister. And like, that's, you know, there is so much to point out that like being a cis woman and having a child does not mean you have to give up your whole life. And
right.
I think that like, it's okay. I think we're going to see more and more of it happening until it's not a big deal anymore.
For sure.
Egypt.
I hope we do.
Yeah.
Egypt is talking about the election that they just had. They just had a sort of a similar election to Putin's quote win in Russia, in the Russian quote election, because the person wrote, apparently the guy running against Sisi voted for him in the booth because he couldn't see his name and not vote for him. Was like how his opponent said it. He was like, I was just overcome with the grandeur of the incumbent and had to vote for him. So the whole election is a sham. They put up a candidate who is obviously, you know, a straw man. In Austria, this just reminds me of better times. In Austria, the former government established a law to ban smoking from restaurants and bars, but the newly voted government abolished the law before it came into effect. I remember when
smoke in bars?
Yeah, now like they stopped it from being outlawed.
Dope.
Yeah.
I mean, that's also not good for servers.
What's the new government? What else is different about the new government besides their smoking rules? Because they could be like way right wing on top of everything else.
But I do remember when smoking was being outlawed from like different places in public, and that was our biggest news story in America.
Oh,
like,
God,
those were the days.
Love to have those days back.
Iran, this is an interesting sort of blend of state-controlled media. Is their government wants the people to support domestic production, even though, according to this Redditor, most of it is hot garbage. They've already started passing shitty laws banning certain imports. So it's sort of a combination of them messaging people to try and get them interested in those things and then accurate reporting being like, this is not good for our economy.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But South Africa, though,
yeah,
they're going through it. They put someone in jail for the first time for talking some racist bullshit, which is crazy to me. This woman, Vicky Momberg, used racist language against these police, specifically the K word, which is like the most offensive racial slur in the country. And it was like a viral video because this woman was robbed and then she was saying she wouldn't speak with the black police, she would only speak with a white person. And she was given a 3-year sentence with 1 year suspended for like using this kind of hate speech. Which is very interesting because that sparked all kinds of debate, sort of like not just in South Africa, even like people in America. Kind of the idea of, you know, criminalizing speech is sort of crazy to us because of the First Amendment. But, you know, in Canada, France, like in Germany, they already have laws that like you can be penalized criminally for, you know, like hate speech. So it's crazy to see, especially in a country like South Africa, for them to not to suggest that South Africa is like, you know, completely upside down, but it's crazy that they're following through on things like this, like to really try and crack down on hate speech, because I'm sure there are many countries, this country especially, could do with something like that or to look at our laws.
Well, South Africa is interesting in that South Africa has such an even more brutal, like with the history of apartheid and stuff like that,
the fact
that they've swung so far in the other direction is interesting and kind of notable. So
yeah, and like I know at first, like her lawyers were trying to say that she was in a very frazzled state after being robbed, although, you know, other witnesses came to sort of corroborate that like she had sort of always been racist.
Yeah.
And I think the judge found her to be sort of completely unremorseful. So, I mean, that is something to think about. Because there are people who are sort of unrepentant, hateful people, And yeah, where is that line where you have a democratic free society where, yeah, you have free speech, but you also understand that there's types of speech that humiliate and harm people. And how do you deal with that?
Yeah, right. I maybe it's just my little bit of civic pride that I have left over.
Right.
This is like one bridge that I feel like even I, super liberal as I am, and as someone who hates being misgendered and hates being called, you know, slurs, I just, I don't know if I feel comfortable moving that.
It can be a slippery slope, yeah.
Because, yeah, like it's such that is one thing where I'm like, ah, that's like, I mean, I wish there was like, I think the way that we do it now, where it's kind of the court of public opinion, is sort of the way that like can also backfire. And that's why it's like, it's so hard to tell what the limit is and like what should be criminalized and what shouldn't. And so I tend to lean more towards still keeping speech free.
Yeah.
Right.
And like in this case, I feel like what she could also have been arrested for in the exact same scenario is like resisting arrest or like, like failure to comply with the officer's direction. Like that's more what's happening here. I mean, like they know that they actually have these laws, but like the same situation in America, the same person could be arrested and it wouldn't be because of what she said, but because of her actions and what she was doing in the situation, which I think is important. Like, I think that usually in cases where someone is using hate speech here, you can kind of usually prove some sort of discrimination is involved with it too. And that's where you can maybe get into a more legal,
civil court. Yeah.
For me, the idea of like, you have to like systematically define what a slur is and like what they like.
And I could see that, you know, laws are put in place to prevent the saying of racist things. But then when a Republican comes into power, then using the word racist becomes against the law.
Exactly.
But it does, at the very least, it sort of stimulates these sort of conversations, you know, of like, how do you, because I know ideally we want to figure out a way to dissuade people from speaking like this or holding these views. But, you know, some people may just, you know, be so lost that they cannot be changed.
Yeah. I want to hear more from our South African listeners, if we have any out there.
Oh, we do. Africa, they're out there.
South Africa is bonkers, man. We did an interview with somebody who lived in South Africa talking just about like the weaponized cars that they have, because carjackings are so common. They have like cars that shoot fire out of the side.
Oh, shit.
Like some James Bond shit?
Is there a guy in a red suit playing a flame guitar? Yeah, what's happening?
It's very
mask
mad
of his dead mother on his
face. Riley, it has been a pleasure as always having you. Where can people find you, follow you, learn more about you?
You can find me on Twitter at Riley J. Silverman. And right now the best thing to do to check me out is I am in a TV series called Take My Wife, which is now available on iTunes. I think it was kind of lost in the void last time I was here, but it is back from the void. It is on iTunes. You can get seasons 1 and 2 for only $9.99 each on iTunes. And I am in season 2.
Nice.
Oh.
Guest star.
Miles.
Me? Oh, on social media, at Miles of Gray on Twitter and the Gram.
You can follow me at Jack_O'Brien on Twitter. We are at Daily Zeitgeist on Twitter. We're at The Daily Zeitgeist on Instagram. We have a Facebook fan page and a website, dailyzeitgeist.com, where we post our episodes and our footnotes, where we link off to the articles containing the information that we talked about on today's episode. Also, we just changed platforms that we're posting and publishing our episodes on, and we have heard from some of you having technical difficulties. If you are having technical difficulties, please reach out to us on Twitter or, you know, however, and please let us know what you're listening to the show on, like what application you're using and what type of, you know, hardware you have, what type of phone, or if you're listening on your laptop, that'll help us get to the bottom of it. That's going to do it for today. Miles, do you have a song to ride us out on?
Yeah, let's play this song, Always, by the band Junip, that I really like. It's Jose Gonzalez. You might have heard of him, but this is his band. And, you know, I just like the smooth sounds of this Swedish man and his band. You know, it's a groover. Just keep loving your heart always. That's my message to you.
And that's going to do it for today. We will be back tomorrow because it is a daily podcast. Talk to you then. Bye.
Cards and distant bells, humming all of empty shells, holding on tight onto a dead sky. Nomadic moves across the lawn, step by step into the dawn. Thank you.
Zeit gang, you like to watch new stuff, right? I mean, who doesn't? I do. Well, go to Hulu and see what's new, because Hulu has new stuff all the time, like Vanderpump Villa, the new docudrama starring Lisa Vanderpump, where first-class luxury meets world-class drama, a new season of The Kardashians starring The Kardashians, of course, and Grand Cayman, Secrets in Paradise, the sizzling new reality show set in the tropical Caribbean. It's streaming now, and it's waiting for you on Hulu.
What up? I am Dramos, host of the Life as a Gringo podcast. This is a show for the No Sabo kids, the 200%ers. Here we celebrate your otherness and embrace living in the gray area. Every Tuesday, I'll be bringing you conversations around personal growth, issues affecting the Latin community, and much more. Then, every Thursday, I'll be tackling trending stories and current events from our community. Listen to Life as a Gringo on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
If you love sports and true crime, then there's a new podcast from executive producer Dan Patrick and hosted by me, Jay Harris, that you won't want to miss. Playing Dirty: Sports Scandals. Each week, I'm squeezing the juiciest details from some of the biggest sports scandals ever. I'm talking Marcus Dixon, Olympic gymnastics, Cain Velasquez, salacious Super Bowl-level scandals. Join me on the dark side of sports by listening to Playing Dirty Sports Scandals on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Imagine you're a fly on the wall at a dinner between the mafia, the CIA, and the KGB. That's where my new podcast begins. This is Neil Strauss, host of To Live and Die in L.A., and I wanted to quickly tell you about an intense new series about a dangerous spy taught to seduce men for their secrets and sometimes their lives. From Tenderfoot TV, this is To Die For. To Die For is available now. Listen for free on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.